Leah Delaria, welcome to Queer Radio on 4ZZZ in Brisbane. How are you going?
Fantastic. Happy to be on. Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful to know that you're coming to visit Brisbane to be part of the Brisbane Jazz Festival. Would this be your first trip to Brisbane?
This is indeed my first trip to Brisbane. So, I've been to Sydney and I've been to Adelaide. So this trip, I'm actually doing Sydney, Adelaide, Melbourne, and Brisbane. So four of the five big cities.
Right. Now, people should realize that you are, in fact, a legitimate star, as has been mentioned in the notes for this performance. It's on the 6th of November at the Brisbane Powerhouse, which is a big venue. You're playing in the Powerhouse Theatre itself. Okay. I first saw you in the film The Edge of 17.
Now I know exactly who you are, honey. I always know exact. When people mention Edge of 17 as the first thing, I'm like, I know exactly who you are. Did it remind you of your of when you were growing up?
Well, certainly, as I came out later in life, I came out at around, say, age 36, 37, really, I realized the value of people like the character Angie, who you played in that film. But, yeah, I should have come out at the same age as that young man did.
Yes, yes, yes. I wish I had had somebody like Angie when I was growing up, believe me.
Hmm. And that role of mentoring, I imagine it's, especially for you personally, it's not something that's been exclusive to that film. Do you find yourself being a mentor permanently?
The role of mentoring is not really what I do, Leah Delaria, as a human, but as an actor, acting in that role, yeah, it was great.
Okay. And Angie was really sweet. Do you find that you identify closely with Angie in that respect?
Not even remotely. That's really? Why I'm laughing. Is so completely and utterly different from that. You know, I'm like the bad girl lesbian comic, and Ellen is the good girl. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm down and dirty and grungy and so on. But the thing is, when I come to Brisbane, what'll be different is that it won't be comedy. It's going to be pure singing in support of my new record that's come out in the Warner Jazz label.
Mm-hmm. So what I've heard of you so far is the album The Very Best of Leah Delaria. And have they done a good job? Is that your very best?
Is that my very best? No. That was the best of the first two records that I put out. I would hardly call it my very best. Okay. But you know, they always do that. It's like the best of. And, really the best things I've done haven't been recorded.
Well, that's worthwhile because when we hear The Ballad of Sweeney Todd, which is released as a single, hey, from Play It Cool, and you really nail it.
Thank you. I mean, that particular, The Ballad of Sweeney Todd was kind of the whole reason that I got into the world of jazz. It was just something that I put together, and I went on stage at Carnegie Hall when they were doing this tribute to Stephen Sondheim, a jazz tribute to Stephen Sondheim, and I went and did that number, and I stopped the show, and Stephen came backstage and had a nice long conversation with me, which was totally awesome.
Wow.
And then the A&R representative from Warner Brothers was behind him and said, let's give you a four-record deal. It was amazing.
Okay.
Changed my life.
Uh-huh. But if you've had this other life as a comedian, as mm-hmm. Such a notorious, perhaps, stand-up comedian, does that then influence much of what an audience really expects when they turn up to your shows?
Not really, because, what happened was I was a kind of stand-up comic that was loud and brash and in your face, you know what I mean? And people could only take about 5 minutes of it, and then they'd be like, Mommy, make it stop. It's too much. It's too loud. It's too fast. It's too, wild. So what I always did was I would sing a song. After about 15 minutes, 10 minutes comedy, I would sing a song. I would sing a jazz song. I usually had a trio on stage with me or a quartet. And then I would, kind of lull the audience into this kind of false sense of security before I would start screaming at them again. So I was always a comic who sang. And after I got the lead in the On the Town on Broadway, the Broadway Revival, and then, of course, Rocky Horror Show in Chicago and the other shows that I've done on Broadway, I became more known as a singer. And so I've gone from being a stand-up who could sing to being a singer who's funny. So that was like 10 years ago when that happened. So most people, I think, are aware of the fact that my career has progressed.
Okay. Do you find that your working life is more demanding now that you're a vocalist first?
my working life is insane because I do still do stand up, especially now with the political climate in this country and Sarah Palin, honey, I cannot stop talking about her. And so I do the stand up, I do the singing, and I'm actually on an American soap opera right now called One Life to Live. So I'm doing a bunch of acting as well. So I'm constantly, when you are as edgy and as butch as I am and look the way that I look and say the things that I say, it's really hard to make a living doing one thing. So I do about five different things. And between them, I have a career.
Okay. And do you squeeze a personal life in there, too?
I try to squeeze a personal life in. I've got, actually, my musical director, who's coming down with me to Australia, is my girlfriend. She's a very well-known composer and pianist. In her own right, she's toured with everyone from Oasis to Elvis Costello, and she scored the new Bob Hoskins movie, which is called Ruby Blue. So she'll be coming down with me, and we have a good life together.
Lovely. So can we have her name?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I not say her name?
No.
Oh, my God. I'm never going to get laid again. Her name is Jeanette Mason.
Right. No, I'll look for her on iTunes and IMDb. And it's interesting, though, how people probably would expect you to be stereotyped just because of perhaps your haircut and your body shape. And I liked in the TV series Further Tales of the City, when your character is introduced, and it was written that these women just assume that your character must be lesbian, and they play that card on your character.
I was also dating someone named Yvonne, remember?
Yes.
and Yvonne ended up being a Russian man.
Yeah. That was a really sweet twist. You must have loved that.
Wasn't that a great twist?
Yep.
Yes. Armstead wrote that part for me. It was a fun little part. I had such a good time doing that.
Uh-huh.
And that was the second time I had worked with Laura Linney, who I think is a goddess. So it was always... You know, nothing like being, stranded in a small city in Alaska with Laura Linney to have a good time, trust me. We got good and drunk together and talked and laughed and had a great time.
She's gone on to become such a big star, from her starting Tales of the City.
Yeah, she's huge. Academy Award nominations. She works all the time. Her film work has been impeccable. Her stage work here in New York, and that's where I worked with her before. It's just, you know. And then, beyond all of that, she's hideous, too. She's ugly, isn't she?
That's what my mother often says when she's watching TV. Oh, they get such beautiful people on these shows, don't they? And there's a reason for this, Mum. No.
Yeah.
With music, what I have with me is the very best of Leah Delaria. And you also do a fantastic job of It Don't Mean a Thing, If It Ain't Got That Swing. My only other experience of that is with Rosemary Clooney doing it. And to know that you're sort of up there in that class must make you feel sort of, comfortable with life.
Wow, interesting question. You did ask me if I was comfortable with life, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to have to say no on that because I'm so kind of over what's going on with queer people right now, and in my country the politics are just insane, and so I'm not comfortable. The only time I'm comfortable is when I'm on stage. I'm really easy and laid back. When I'm on stage, I'm really comfortable and easy and in the moment of being on stage. But the minute I get off stage, I get really rageful and angry about the state of the world.
Okay, so what is it that's happening with queer people in particular that is getting you upset?
I think personally that queer people, that our quote-unquote movement, if we can call it that, has been usurped by a bunch of kind of rich white guys. They talk about these issues that don't mean anything anymore. I mean, like, we're really focusing so hard on gay marriages. Don't get me wrong. I think that if a gay person wants to get married, they should go out and they should get married. And the minute somebody says you can't get married because you're gay, I've got a problem with that. But I like to examine what it is about us that makes us feel the need to imitate straight people, like our relationships aren't good enough unless they are like theirs. I don't think anybody should get married.
Fair enough. Yeah, and there's enough, I know, young people who certainly absolutely agree with you. There's a tendency, though, for a lot of queer people to not do anything politically.
Yeah, the need for gay rights seems to have disappeared. I mean, even when you come to the New York Gay Pride rally, there's a lot of people, but they're not really politicized anymore. It's like a lot of guys in thongs dancing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is cool. I mean, there's plenty of room for guys in thongs dancing. It's always been a part of who we are. It'll always be a part of who we are. You know what I mean? But it's like there's not the people out there that are politicized anymore. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, as I said, our movement has been taken over by a lot of middle-class mainstream people that don't want us to rock the boat. They're afraid if we rock the boat that we may not get our rights. It's like, don't get the Republicans or the Democrats angry with us because then maybe we won't get to get married. And it's crazy. You know what I mean? You go to a gay pride rally in here or in New York or in San Francisco, and there's just float after float of all these, like, religious gay organizations. Why would anybody queer want to belong to a religious organization? I mean, who hates gay people more than religious organizations? It's crazy to me, you know? Why don't you join the gay Ku Klux Klan?
Yep, that's true. And speaking of which, like you were saying before, that you're particularly concerned about Sarah Palin. And Matt Damon, good on him, he came out and he said that it's just really dangerous to consider that she might be vice president because of all that goes with her.
We certainly hope not. I mean, please. Who is this? Where did he find this woman? He was, like, so desperate to find a woman that he went. I mean, I don't know her. She might be a really nice person. My guess is she's not. But, you know, I don't. But that's the biggest issue. I don't know her. I have no idea who she is. She just popped up out of the blue. Where did he find her? Where did he find her? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, the fact that no one in the world knows her, no one in politics knows her, and all of a sudden there she is, and she's a gun-toting mama who is against all gay rights. This is how bad she is against gay rights. I got to tell you this. She gave a little speech here, and it was her acceptance speech, and she told a joke in her acceptance speech when she accepted the VP nomination. Well, she told this joke, and the joke was, what's the difference between a soccer mom and a bulldog? And the punchline was lipstick.
Okay.
Well, I know that joke, and the joke is usually, what's the difference between a soccer mom and a bull dyke? And the answer is lipstick.
Okay.
So not only is she not... Not only is she not going to allow us to get married, she won't even let us tell lesbian jokes. She's a bad thing. She has to go. What, am I not going to be able to say how many lesbians does it take to screw in a light bulb? That's not funny. Who is this woman? She edited us right out of our own joke.
Yep. And there's the other one, you know, what does a lesbian bring on the second date? Her furniture.
I can't believe you're telling me that joke. I wrote that joke.
Good on you. Fantastic.
You didn't know that, did you?
No, I did not know that. So is that a compliment?
I wrote that joke, and it has become a complete... It is like, honey, it's registered, recorded fact in America that I wrote that joke. I wrote that joke in 1988 for a show I did called Lesbo a Go-Go, and it has become embedded in the culture of queers. But yes, I wrote that joke.
Wow. Now, every time I hear that joke in the future and every time I mention it, I'll make sure that you get a credit.
Go ahead. No, you know, what can I do about it? It's one of those jokes. It's easy to tell. It just swept through our culture.
Yep. And it's changed the world a little bit because now women are going to have to start thinking when they go on dates, like how serious do I get and how fast?
Or where to rent the U-Haul.
Now, when you appear here in Brisbane on the 6th of November, are you going to be meeting the people afterwards? Do you do a signing?
Yes, I'm sure I'll be signing CDs afterwards. And, you know, I just want to say to the gay people who are out there to please come to the show. You know, you're not going to hear a lot of comedy. I am funny. I have to tell that I can't help it. When I talk between songs, I will be funny because I can't help it. It's just not a stand-up focused show. This is a jazz festival. And that's the beauty, I mean, that's the beauty of being as out as I am, that I can do something as straight-laced and as mainstreamed as the Brisbane Jazz Festival, still be who I am, and still, you know, kick ass at that festival. So it'd be really great to have, like, all these queer people come and just to this really kind of mainstream event. You know, and just show who we are.
Well, I'll be there with my brother, and we'll be yeah, cheering you on, and certainly I'll come and say hello after the show. And it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, Leah Delaria.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I cannot wait to see Brisbane.
Cool. Have a safe trip.